Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone, alongside Carissa Cruz, President and CEO of The Wine Growers. We're here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine.
And gummy cherries.
And happy almost Halloween. Yes, gummy cherries.
Gummy cherries. I know. I do love that you always bring us unique gummy bears or gummy candy to enjoy. And you also brought the gummy lunch box, which is very odd. Very, very odd.
Yeah, I don't think you can just leave it at that. Well, like, it's odd. Why is it odd? Well,
little miniature hot dogs and hamburgers. And then I had the gummy fries that I actually got to share because they were literally individual gummy fries that were lemon flavored. They were kind of delicious.
I think I'm curious about the gummy pizza. That might have to happen later.
Yes.
But
hopefully we
got a thumbs up on that.
Yeah. Jeff, our producer's in for that.
Yeah. Is that shareable? Does it have slices?
I hope so.
No. That's okay. A one and done. I did appreciate that there were some Coke bottles. One of my favorite gummy forms of food.
I had one of those. Mm-hmm. It was delicious.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to find at an airport in different parts of the world. So
Seriously. There
you go.
Good. Well,
gummy lunch bag.
I know. So much coming up that's, I guess someone was innovative with all of this stuff at one point.
Here we go.
And speaking of innovation, there you go. Do you like that?
Mm-hmm.
So coming up for the Wine Growers this week, we are actually participating in the Thrive Global Impact Initiative, SVG Thrive. They're a VC out of Santa Clara that actually, the founder has been really focused on investing in tech and solutions to support specialty crop farmers, which is fairly unique.
Yeah.
As we know, specialty crops are not quite as scalable in terms of just size of market for investors like it would be if you were wheat, corn, soybeans, kind of like the big Midwest crops. So it's really great to have organizations and VCs that really focus on investment in agriculture, innovation, and tech. So I am actually speaking on a panel, which I'm excited about, talking about our Farm of the Future initiative. So that'll be so much fun.
Are you bringing wine?
I am bringing wine.
Well, then you will be very popular.
Right?
Yes.
I know. That is part of what I'm doing, is bringing wine. And it is true. So last month I was actually in Detroit, also speaking on a panel. And we've probably talked about this a little bit because I went to the Aspen Ideas Festival this summer with Ford Motor Company.
Mm-hmm.
But Jim Farley, their CEO, has really launched a big, commitment and campaign around the essential economy, and is kind of a call to action to companies and our government and private-public partnerships around the world to really think about trades and agriculture being one of them. What are those jobs that if we're not doing, even as much as we move towards technology and AI, you're still going to need farmers and plumbers and electricians. And so how do we continue to focus on not just for your colleges, but trade schools and training for kind of the next generation?
Yeah, so, love it. I think that's super important, super interesting. So look forward to your report back.
Connecting all the dots. And then December, we're hosting our own Farm of the Future Summit. So it's kind of been every month we've been doing something kind of big around thinking about innovation as a form of helping our farmers be more resilient.
Mm-hmm. Very important. Okay, when we come back, we will be introducing our guest on today's Good Stuff. Welcome to The Good Stuff. Our guest in studio today is Jennifer Freebairn, VP Marketing and Sales at Lassiter Family Winery. Welcome.
Thank you. It's so nice to be here with you two.
And you brought...
I was going to say, I already spied the wine.
Bottles of wine, I know, Carissa, won't be able to wait too much longer to open some of those.
But you always make me wait till the second segment, which isn't really fair.
We have stories to hear. We have stories to hear. So, Jennifer, you have an illustrious background. You're at Lassiter Family Winery now, but that's not where you've been your whole career. So
take us way back.
Take us to your childhood in L.A. We want to know everything.
The strange and weirdly also, in its own way, wonderful place of L.A., which, I grew up properly making fun of because it's a crazy place. But
what part of L.A. were you?
I was raised mostly in Sherman Oaks, and my dad lived in Laurel Canyon and kind of up in the hills.
Mm.
So I always say to people, don't go there unchaperoned. It's it's just a big mess. But yeah, there's a lot of really great stuff there. And my family are very focused around music. Music is a big deal in our family. So most of my life was immersed in music. I was a classical musician as a kid. My dad was a film and TV composer and arranger. And my mom ended up later on working at the Tonight Show. And so there was, when music was a huge thing on the Tonight Show, was when it was a long time. She worked there forever and ever, but Branford was running the band and things. That, so anyway.
Okay, so you're name dropping already.
I know.
I was
going
to say,
we need
to know more.
L.A., it becomes a name drop swamp. And the thing that I want to say about that
swamp
is that it's,
I like that. I haven't heard that. I like it.
It's really mostly about what a rich, you know, it wasn't about glamour. We weren't wealthy. It was about a rich immersion behind the scenes, just being around musicians and songwriters, being themselves and having that devotion to noticing moments and writing about things and tuning into each other and playing. And so that stuff I could go on forever, and it's a whole other segment, because it was just a privilege and an honor to be around that, and so inspiring. That even as I got, you know, distracted in high school and college, and the music came back and just found me. It's a lifesaver. And so
I have to say, one of the coolest things I ever experienced, because I lived in LA, well, Manhattan Beach, worked at Universal Studios, and we recorded in home video, and we were recording a new score for the release of the Grinch movie. And they literally wrote the score, and we went over to Warner Brothers, Universal Studios, but we went over to Warner Brothers to record the score, and it's just like all the musicians walked in, probably 200 of them, got the music for the first time, sat down, did about 5 minutes of warm-up, and then just delivered this incredibly amazing, talented score. And I was sitting in the back, and the guitarist was there from Seal, was playing in his own like room, kind of overlaying, and I was just in awe. And literally, it was one of the neatest and probably things that they have been doing, you know, like every day they probably did that with a different sheet set of music. But for me, it was just one of the coolest things I did in LA with Universal Studios, which there was a lot of cool stuff I got to do. But that was really emotional and overwhelming. So I love the music piece of that very, very much. It like speaks to me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, there you go. You had the experience.
That moment. Yeah.
Yeah. And music is, again, it could go on forever, but it's so powerful, and it is, it's just my favorite thing in the world, is the way that I say it. So that was wonderful. And
a classical musician, so what does that mean growing up for you?
Well, it meant that I picked up cello and said, no thanks. Most gorgeous instrument in the world. My sister's a cellist. Violin, no thanks. Too difficult. My stepmother was a professional violinist. Loved those instruments. I picked up a flute. And that was it. It's breathing, it's vocal, it's gorgeous. I had a wonderful teacher. It was compact. I walked to school.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. Cello's more demanding in that regard.
Yeah, it was the thing for me. So I did that, and I always sang in choir. And my father worked on some beautiful films. He actually just passed. One of my favorite pieces was Evergreen for the film A Star Is Born with Barbara Streisand, which is gorgeous.
Gosh.
And she wrote the lyrics, Barbara, and Paul Williams, who my dad worked with a lot, wrote the music. But there's many of those for decades and decades kinds of things.
That magic song is intense.
It's
so emotional. Yeah.
Yeah. So then, you know, the other kind of thread or theme that came together. Oh, so music found me. I became a singer-songwriter. I really fully lived that experience, and I'm so glad. And I never really wanted to be famous, or lots of my friends were getting record deals. You know, all of the music stuff that happens in LA was happening. I really just love the idea that you can make a song out of thin air. And I will be doing that until the day I die, or until I can't do it anymore, because it is the most exciting thing. There's chords, melodies, they're all floating out there, and stories and themes, and you're a writer, you know, things that you just can't wait to express. And
so I have to know, with the flute, was there a song that just solidified it for you?
You know, I was young. I can't remember if I was in third grade, fourth grade, somewhere there. And it was really just, I was playing, you know, Bach and Telemann, I mean, like early classical music. And I just loved the whole sound of it. I actually don't know if there was one tune. Yeah. I love the instrument. Mm-hmm. And I love my teacher. And that makes a huge difference. I had a wonderful person, you know, attending to me in that way and teaching me that instrument. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I never got past the recorder.
Oh, yeah. Well,
is that kindergarten?
It's the worst instrument ever made. I never got past really piano because it was my third grade teacher, I think, was also my piano teacher, and I had to like leave school with her in her Volvo, and it always made me feel carsick, so that's what I think about with music lessons
in middle school. I did a little drums, some of the percussion, and then I was like, what am I going to do with this? And like drums, you can do nothing by yourself, right? Like you don't sound interesting when you're just pounding on a drum by yourself. Like you need others around to make you sound good.
Yeah. And it was unless it's conga. Like conga drums, maybe. I don't picture you doing that.
No. And unlike the flute, carrying around a snare drum is not very easy either when you're in middle school. So I was like, kind of done with that.
Flute was very compact. I love it. Very easy. And what was nice was, speaking of your music lessons, so I had a positive experience with music, but with music lessons. But when it came to songwriting, even though all the immersion in my whole life in music, I really just, and I had a big ear. I had big ears because I listened to a lot of jazz, classical, a lot of different kinds of music. But when I started to write, I just wrote by ear and trusted my fingers and played on the piano. Mm. And everything was just from a very authentic voice. But truthfully, I was really, it was very grounding and wonderful to start that way. So then I'm still not a great piano player. I say I strum the piano, but I love harmony, and I have always been able to lead a band and compose and record and that sort of thing.
Which you still do.
Yeah.
Which I still do.
Yeah, talk about that. How do you do that? I mean, where does that live in Sonoma County for you?
Yeah, well, it's always lived, and I have a professional studio at home, and so I've continued throughout my life to enjoy writing songs and recording them and occasionally play something, but it's a lot of work. I haven't wanted to have a band and do all of that stuff. You know, the wine business, which we'll get to, became a really wonderful balance for the music piece, but I've continued to do that, and then I fell into a much more of a performing role in the last few years, which has just been the greatest gift that I could never have predicted. Mm. And I'm performing all the time, but it doesn't have to be my music unless I occasionally want it to be, and I'll go do a show of my own stuff, a solo or duo or whatever. And I just sing other people's music, and it is the greatest thing.
I love that.
And I fell into the Grateful Dead world, which I think not single-handedly, but contributes greatly to keeping live music alive. Mm-hmm. I had no idea how I've always known of them and all of that, but I mean, I had no idea about the whole scene here. And through that, I mean, there is just live music all the time. There is no rehearsing, never. You just learn songs over time, and you play with different people. You might meet somebody on stage for the first time. You get to know this huge community of musicians.
That's awesome.
It's the greatest thing. The audiences are patient and music loving, and it's just the most wonderful thing. I can't even tell you. So I just, it's a gift, and I'm just grateful every day.
So are there places that you play regularly, or venues that you like to play in Sonoma?
I mean, they kind of range from here to Santa Cruz or from Mendocino
to
Santa Cruz. But one thing that's exciting is the California Theater that opened in the middle of Santa Rosa, where I've done a few things. And how wonderful that, you know, live music is about as easy a business as restaurants and wine, which are all the three things I've been involved in my whole life. So you got to love them. They're for people with a lot of heart and a lot of grit. And so I just love that has opened here. And it's been everything from Rio Nido Roadhouse to, I'm forgetting all of the places that I play because you're asking me, down to Marin and Sweetwater. You know, I mean,
great venues though.
Yeah, cool. All over the place.
I love that you have that outlet.
Yeah.
And you're able to still do that.
Yeah, it's a huge gift. I don't know. I'm just fortunate.
Oh. So you were surrounded by music growing up, and that, you know, is its own culture, clearly, in L.A. But were you also sort of into food culture, you know, kind of growing up around that scene? Because L.A. is one of the top food cities in the world.
Yeah, well, it's so interesting. When I was growing up, we loved making food. We were very much a homemade family. We liked, you know, cooking and sort of improvisational cooking mostly. My dad was a wonderful cook, and my mom. But really what happened is I've been working in restaurants since I was 16. And when it came time to get a job, and we all worked, you know, a lot during high school, we, you know, helped my mom out. And I went to work first at a dessert place and then at this place, Santa Pietro's restaurant in Beverly Glen, which was a little wild hotspot where that was fascinating in its own way. But from the time I was 16, I was just immersed in food. And then wine by the time I was 18. And the real impetus at the beginning was I got to make money. I also wanted to go to Europe. I went on a bike riding trip in 5 countries with my cousin when I was 17. I wanted to save up money quickly while in school. But tips. People are going, my friends are working in retail shops and they're standing around on a floor and I can make tips. I can kind of like work this thing and I can. So it was fascinating to me. So that was really, and then you could be near food and eventually beer, wine, you got coffee, you were at the home and hearth, it was a second home. And so food, wine, the restaurant, the kitchen, I couldn't imagine working anywhere else. It was both grounding, it was educational. I learned everything from Spanish to, you know, sustainable, you know, fishing and like all kinds of, there's just so much that you can learn, just like through wine. It's an incredible lens. And it's also, there's a lot of motion. I need to be moving. Mm-hmm. Everything about restaurants. And I know there are people who are like, I couldn't wait on a person. Forget it. But for me, as a storyteller and songwriter, you get to watch people being human around you with their families and their business partners. I got watched people get engaged and divorced. And I mean, like, what a lens into humanity.
Seriously. So true.
Restaurants for me were just the most incredible place to be. And a great way to make money while you're trying to have enough creative energy to be in university and to make music and do other things.
Yeah, but is that sort of where you started to, I mean, you said you were exposed to sort of beer and wine and all these other things. Is that where you started to learn about wine or taste different wines?
Yes. Yeah, and LA was just becoming a food city when I was there. I mean, it has old iconic restaurants, but this was the age where, you know, Luke and I'm forgetting on La Brea. Anyway, you know, Espago was there. I mean, there was a new culture coming, but there were some really interesting restaurateurs just starting to happen there. It was not the food city that San Francisco was for sure at that time. So it was an exciting time to be part of it. I learned about wine. I like to say I kind of started with Barolo and worked backward because I went to work at a restaurant called Icogini, and David Rossoff, who's a prominent sommelier, we were kind of all coming up together, and Francesco Ferrario and a few other people. We were learning about wine, and we really did start with this just Italian wine list.
Yeah.
So it was incredible and fascinating.
Right. One of the most complicated.
And
yes.
And
yes,
it was kind of
sure.
And it was kind of a good encyclopedia of Italian wine and California wine. And then I went over to Water Grill, which was Michael Cimarusti, who now is one of two restaurants who just earned the first 3-star Michelin ratings in Los Angeles.
Wow.
He is
big deal.
And he and his business partner Donato Poto, we worked at Water Grill, and Michael was just coming up in his career. That was an elevating, wonderful, and very seafood oriented white wine aromatics, you know, international list kind of an education and experience. It was fabulous.
Okay, well, we have clearly
I'm kind of hungry
so
now and definitely
much
thirsty.
So much more to talk about. We have to take a break and clearly open some wine for Carissa.
Yes.
We'll be right back on The Good Stuff. With our guest Jennifer Freebairn, VP of Marketing and Sales at Lassiter Family Winery. And we haven't even gotten to Lassiter Family Winery yet because
I think we should have some wine while we hear
okay.
that story.
Here we go.
Because that feels appropriate
All
since
right.
she brought it for us.
Please.
Oh. Yes.
Ooh, okay. All right. We can breathe again.
It's official.
It's official. Wine will be had. Okay. So you're working at restaurants. You're learning about Barolo and then working your way back. When do you come to Sonoma County?
So I come to Sonoma County. That was the escape from L.A. I came to Sonoma County in 2002, and my husband, who's from Oakland, came down to L.A. for other reasons. He has family down there and was working down there. And I like to say, just, you know, lightheartedly, he got stuck down there with me. But really, the music thing was really fun. I mean, it was wonderful. Our whole life with music and even restaurants and related things was really pretty wonderful. But, you know, you want to escape L.A. It happens, and it takes a while. And especially if you are involved in music and other things there, it's more challenging than it seems. So I was working at Water Grill. Paul Einbund was the sommelier, who very well known here now for his restaurant, The Morris, and the new one, which I think is Sirene, but I actually don't remember if I've seen how to pronounce it, but I haven't been there yet. But anyway, he was another really influential person. You know, L.A., as I said, was just becoming a real food and wine place. And back then, that was like the turn of the century, and it was a little unusual to be serving Grüner Veltliner and Vin de Savoie and dry Riesling and things by the glass. You know, we really had a really educational time there, and Paul is a huge influence. And Paul Hobbs, when I eventually ended up working for Paul Hobbs, we were the largest on-premise Paul Hobbs account in Los Angeles. Mm. Paul Einbund had an association there and would come up and do harvest with Paul. So I was a restaurant manager. I was doing every role in the book there, but really just it was time to leave L.A. and wanted to escape. So I met Paul Hobbs and Kimberly Jones was also involved. She was selling us Paul Hobbs at the time at the restaurant. Yeah. Small world.
Yep.
So all of that led to us moving up, and I went to work for Paul. And it was a really fortunate time to be entering the wine business in 02. First of all, Paul is dynamic. The winery is his life. It was very DIY. We were a tiny team. There were no buildings owned. There was just a vineyard and a house. I mean, it was really all hands. Yeah. And so I got immersed in everything. Immediately I was running picks. I was doing wholesale. I was becoming a writer for the company. I mean, it was immersive.
Everything.
Yeah. Do everything.
Yeah. And for me, that was fabulous because I like to learn by doing. And I thought all marketing and sales jobs were like that, but it turns out they're not. And I don't even know what my title was. Everything person coming in from the restaurant world, who knows what?
The clutch person.
Yeah.
Clutch person. But it developed into an incredible role. As you know, he had a serious relationship with Argentina. His daughter is Argentine, and he spent half the year living there. So we had, suffice to say, a lot of fascinating work to do, and we also worked in Hungary and in France and Finger Lakes. I mean, there was just a lot there. So it was a great time to come work for him. His star was rising, and it was a rich time for 12 years there. And also, I look back now at that time in the wine business, how fortunate to be a part of that when this country, I think it was in 2005, was the first time this country consumed more wine than beer or whiskey in its history. So yeah, you know, you guys have had the experience. You know all of the things that were coming together at that time. And you could, I like to throw in all the things to the mix. Two Buck Chuck was helping people in the United States think about drinking wine with dinner rather than as some special occasion. You know, Robert Parker was a wine advocate. I mean, he was helping people slice and dice and understand and give them a way into this huge world of wine. I mean, you could mention so many things. Sideways, you know, all of it.
Yeah.
And it was a fascinating time to be part of the wine business and to get involved in exports and imports. So that was an all-encompassing job that formed a lot of great adventures and relationships and all of that. And that was really our time here. And then my husband went back to finish an abandoned engineering degree, which, of course, turned into enology and viticulture because we were totally immersed.
What do you know?
And so he became a winemaker, and the rest is history.
Is that right? So where does he make wine?
So he worked his way. He worked at many different places through harvest after going to Davis. He drove to Davis from Sebastopol every day and finished that degree. And he worked at many different places and ended up working his way up from Chalk Hill to Sebastiani. He was the winemaker at Roth Estate.
Okay.
And now he's making wine for a small winery called Metzger Family Estates.
Sure.
And so he's done a lot of different things. And he, mm-hmm. yeah.
So how do you get to Lassiter?
So,
I mean, yeah, that 12 years was a serious education.
But that seems like an intersection of LA meets wine, if there ever were one. So
yes.
That's sort of amazing.
Well, yes, and totally organic, as my entire life in wine has been. And as the case for so many people in the wine business, they come from other places, and, you know, you get into it somehow. So after Paul Hobbs, I went to work for Acosta Brown for a couple of years and did some other things in between, and then was a consultant during the pandemic,
mm-hmm.
which happened to be good timing. I was very lucky to be able to work from home. I'm aware of what a privilege that was. But the architect for Paul Hobbs was Jessie Whitesides, and she had been somebody that I knew since 02 when I first came up here. And she was also doing architecture for the Lassiters. And she had, so I kind of was introduced mm-hmm. to the winery through her. So another sort of just natural, you know, just organic thing that happened.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so I began working with them during the pandemic, which was interesting. It was all Zoom, all remote, didn't really meet them in person.
Wow.
And I was a consultant at that time, and I was very happy being a consultant. It was really nice to be freelance. I have to say that everything about that winery, the project, them, their family, their thoughtfulness, their artistry, their interest in the community, just like the entire thing was so rich and substantial and wonderful, and also for me, wonderfully local and mm-hmm. smaller. Mm-hmm. This was not a brand that was out. You know, I mean, the brands I've worked for have all still been very artisanal, but they've been brands out there in the world all around, you know.
And rocket ships, too. You were riding a couple of rocket ships there with Hobbs and Costa Brown at the time.
Right? I mean, really. And so this is just this wonderfully localized winery, which is also about the place and the property and the interesting things there, which I could talk a little bit more about later. But, you know, there just was so much beauty and substance there. And so I just signed on, and I've been there ever since.
So just we have to take a break in about a minute or so, but the quick 101 history of Lassiter, when did they start and who are the Lassiters? And maybe if that takes too long, we can wait till the next segment, but just because people may not know.
Yeah. Well, I think John has a pretty big creative career that people are aware of, the innovator and director and creative mind behind Toy Story and everything since.
So many things, Pixar,
Yeah, all that beautiful stuff. And Nancy, you know, the winery is really so much about Nancy's creativity and focus. And she was an engineer for Apple and met John while she was an engineer, so they had a lot in common. She directed a computer animated short film called Pencil Test, which was actually the first 3D computer animated film created with personal Mac computers.
Impressive.
Yeah, so they had a lot in common, and she eventually stepped away to raise their now 5 grown sons, and the winery was really a big focus for her, so we'll talk more about that.
Okay, well, we will take a quick break and come back with Jennifer Freebarn to talk more about Lassiter. With Jennifer Freebarn, VP Marketing and Sales at Lassiter Family Winery. And so in the time that we have left, we really should talk about what is special about Lassiter, the experience there, you know, it's so much about them. So tell us a little bit more.
Yes. Well, as I mentioned, you know, Nancy really devoted herself to raising the kids and also to creating. It's a joint venture of the two of them, but really she was so deeply involved in the winery and sort of bringing that to life. And so they, you know, Nancy and John fell in love, and then they came to Sonoma and fell in love with Sonoma, and they've been here for decades, and it was a weekend getaway, and then they made it their home, and of course they got involved in winemaking and home winemaking, just being immersed in this culture up here, and eventually that, you know, sort of slowly moved over into more of a professional endeavor, and they founded the winery in 2000. By 2005, we were producing estate wine because they had been able to acquire this historic property that had been, you know, that area had been an enclave for the earliest French winemakers in California. Mm-hmm. Very, very special place in the narrowest part of the valley, and so they acquired this property, and it was beautiful but really in need of restoration. Mm. So from then to now, to just keep it short and simple, they have dedicated themselves to that land. Mm. And there are things from the old vines Infidel in a field blend to there were a lot of French varieties. Everything has been restored, organically farmed. Water conservation is of huge importance. The whole ecosystem is beautiful and healthy. It's a wonderful place. And they fell in love with wine in a big way through their travels through the south of France, mm-hmm. where wines are blended and where it's Grenache, Syrah, Merlot, along with many other things. Mm-hmm. So that was really kind of the template for the early wines, and from there we've branched out. We now have the property is in Glen Ellyn, so I should say that it's outside the town of Glen Ellyn. It's a hidden gem, and once the gates open, it is absolutely beautiful. It's a world of its own, and we also have a 9 acres planted up on the top of Moon Mountain, which you can see the little patch from the winery, and so that's a whole other set of just gorgeous wines from this volcanic terroir. They've always been fascinated with high elevation wine, so that's a whole other second chapter there. But we produce a number of Rhone style wines, from rosé to reds, on the property. Everything is estate grown, and then also Bordeaux varieties, and mm-hmm. we produce a number of those wines. So there's lots of interesting things. They're all very small lot. Our wines are mail list, on property, or fine restaurants in California. They're very localized. You cannot buy them anywhere else, and the experiences are wonderful. You can do an immersive experience where you are in our tasting salon and also in the cellar and doing barrel tasting, and the pairings, the food pairings that we do are quite unique and really make for a conversation in and of themselves. So everything is, with the Lassiters, is thoughtful to the detail, artistic, it's beautiful. Or you can do a vineyard tour, also immersive, and learn all about that. Or you can do a patio tasting, which just gives you these sweeping views of the property and enjoy the wines there.
Yeah, gorgeous place. Tell us a little bit about the wine that you poured for us, because it is it's a very instrumental wine in their story, right?
Absolutely.
So tell us, it's called Chemin de Fer.
Yes.
So they name a lot of their wines after their love of the Rhone, I take it, but there's more to that story.
Yes, yes. And Chemin de Fer they really love the wines of Châteauneuf-du-Pape. And so this is a Châteauneuf-du-Pape style Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre that was one of the founding wines for the winery. It's near and dear to both of their hearts. And there is also in this series of wines, there is artwork associated with each wine.
Which I love.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. It's so interesting.
It's wonderful. Dennis Siminski is the artist, who's a fabulous and longtime friend of the Lassiters. And each label is graced with artwork that was commissioned by them with Dennis for each wine, to tell the story of the wine. And in their style, the Lassiters, of always innovating and being creative. That artwork now is accompanied by a QR code on the back label. And I just have to mention that because it allows us to take you to maybe a little video of John and Nancy telling stories or other information that's fun and interesting that we'll keep changing over time.
So you get a cinematic experience with every bottle.
You get that in the most wonderful way. And so Chemin de Fer is the story of that, is that they traveled by train through the south of France, fell in love with Chateauneuf du Pape, and there is a train motif on that wine. John is also, this is the biggest understatement of the year, he is really into trains.
I've heard that.
Yeah. So there's a train motif on this wine, and yeah, it's just a really important wine for us. We love it. And this is a little preview. I just thought I'd pull some stuff out of the, you know, this is 23, and it's just gorgeous, fragrant, I think not overblown. It's got a soft juiciness to it, but also a really nice little bit of brightness and some minerality. So,
Chris has finished hers.
I'm saying yes.
She's ready for more. So we have to take another quick break. We're going to come right back on with Jennifer and close things up on the good stuff. Things out on the good stuff with our guest Jennifer Freebarn, VP of Marketing Sales, Lassiter Family Winery. And so this is even faster. So how do people come? Reservations are required? How do they get in on this deal? How do they come and see the trains?
Yes, reservations are required, although we love to make a way for people who might be last minute. So just call us, 707-933-2814. Go look us up online, and however you want to get a hold of us, we would love to see you. And we're open 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
An email, info@lfwinery.com. There you go.
Yes. Thank
you. Lassiter Family Winery, lfwinery.com.
Yes.
Okay. So do it. In the meantime, we should talk about what we're going to be drinking on Tuesday. And I think something Lassiter, personally.
Well, yeah. So having just, you know, tried the GSM, I'm going to pull out the Syrah and isolate it and have the 2021 Syrah from Lassiter because I do love Syrah.
Yes, you do, and I do too.
I know. I like it.
All right, I'm gonna play that game, but I'm going white. I'm doing the Zutador 22 Sauvignon Blanc, Sonoma Valley, because Zutador is such a great thing to say, and it just shows their love of all things France. So yeah, and it's not Rhone, but you know that's okay. This time is all right.
It's one of the only phrases I remember from my high school French class, Zutelors. My teacher would be like, Zutelors. And I'm like, ooh, okay.
Uh-oh. Watch out.
That merit? And you're like,
So. My grandmother taught me worse than that.
Yeah, so, sure. Well, it was still PG because it was high school.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, okay, so Jennifer, you're on. What are you drinking Tuesday night?
Well, since you two have so beautifully covered Lassiter, I will make a shameless plug for the tiny, tiny little brand that my husband and I make together, which is called Wow and Flutter. Oh. And Wow and Flutter makes just one single vineyard Pinot Noir, less than 200 cases each vintage, from a grower we love. And Wow and Flutter is a sonic term for one of the imperfections in analog recording that contributes to the warmth of the sound. So we like the...
Wow.
Okay, what?
we think that was emblematic of Mother Nature and her little how she's always playing around. You can't quite control everything that's going on.
Well, that's a philosophical.
I know. We're gonna need another whole show on that.
I know.
Yeah. I never used to bother with that story, and then people said, "Oh my God, I love that!" So I started telling the story.
But you should.
Yeah. So I would drink Wow and Flutter Pinot Noir on a Tuesday night. 22 Clop Ranch.
She upped the ante here, didn't she? Is there somewhere that people can follow your music career?
Yes, if they can figure out how to spell my name, it's jenniferfreebairn.com, and you can find me there or on the socials or any of that. I have one handle only, Jennifer Freebairn, everywhere. I can't keep track of all these cute handles people have, so it's just me.
It's just you.
Just look up the name.
Okay.
I love that so much.
Well, go visit Lassiter. It's an incredible experience in Glen Ellen. Lots of wines, reservations suggested.
Yeah.
Not required. They're friendly.
Yeah.
It's a friendly, inviting place.
Yes. Yeah. Just call first.
Call first. And I don't know. Anything else that we want to...
No, I'm going to get back to pouring some more wine.
Okay. Well, with that, from Sonoma County to wherever you are, remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.
Cheers. Thank you.